Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network, and I am Constance Arnold, your host for the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show, and I am broadcasting live today from beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. Well, I want to thank all of you for joining me from all over the world. And my declaration over your life today is that wealth is your divine heritage. Well, how are you doing today? I pray that you have had a powerful week of manifestations. Well, today I have a very special show for you with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, who co-authored the book with Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. This is a life-changing interview that will transform your life. But before we hear Dr. Kimbrough, I have a quick commercial that I want you to listen to, and then we're going to be right back, okay?
Thank you. Because of you and the Law of Attraction, we've made listening a little easier. The Law of Attraction Radio Network's 24/7 broadcast is now syndicated to 19 major internet radio networks, including iTunes Radio. Not only can you tune into the radio broadcast, you can now get the apps for the show you are listening to right now through Stitcher.com. That's right. Now you can hear this popular show through the stereo systems of the new Ford cars and BMWs. Or you can keep on listening through your MP3 player or on your computer as you surf the net. Go to loaradionetwork.com and find the show page to your favorite radio show. Simply download the app to listen to our continuous 24/7 broadcast or just this one magnificent show. Remember, loaradionetwork.com.
Well, are you ready? I want you to really listen intensely to this wonderful pre-recorded interview with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, Living Your Dream. And so, Dr. Dennis Kimbrough, welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Oh, you could have had anybody, Constance. Thanks for having me. I'm honored.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So how has your day been today?
My day has been very good, very productive. I'm working. I'm in my study right now prior to this phone call. I'm in the midst of working on my fifth book. So the beat goes on for me.
The beat goes on. Well, let's get started. Share your story with our listeners behind Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice.
Well, when I got my degree, my doctorate from Northwestern University, and people have heard this, but it certainly bears repeating, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I certainly knew what I didn't want to do. At the time, I was my dissertation was going to focus on wealth and poverty of undeveloped African countries. Well, I shifted the focus from not wealth and poverty, but just wealth and success, and not African countries, but black individuals. So I went around the country, and I started with a list of 50 individuals that I wanted to meet and interview, primarily to ask them two questions. Number one, what is success? Why does one person succeed while another fails? And question number two, why is one individual rich and wealthy while another is impoverished? I was armed with the same three-page questionnaire, no matter who I interviewed, mm-hmm. but those two questions stood front and center to my survey. And that list grew from 50 to 100, from 100 to at least 150 interviews. And since the book that I was working on was What Makes the Great Great, that was the title of the book that I was working on at the time. And I had a number of articles published because it was really seminal in the fact that here is a book that was focused on African Americans, and it wasn't focused on pathology, and it wasn't focused on social science, and it wasn't focused on history. But it was focused on achieving and success and things of that nature, so it was somewhat path-breaking. Well, I had a number of articles published in Atlanta Journal-Constitution and Success Magazine, and when word began to spread, I went to New York to interview Earl Graves. He was, I forgot what number he was on the list, but he was one of the individuals that I had to interview at the time. And when I got back to my Atlanta home, Constance, I saw there was a message from W. Clement Stone. Now, for your listeners out there who do not know the story about W. Clement Stone in the 1950s and 60s and late into the 70s, he was one of the wealthiest individuals in the world. As of 1952, he was worth $100 million, with his Combined Insurance Company of America. And he was a big proponent as a of Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich and Laws of Success. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, at one time he was Hill's business partner.
Wow.
And, yes. And so he called me up, and for again, for your listeners, Napoleon Hill was by far America's most prolific self-help writer. I mean, two individuals stand front and center in terms of this whole genre of self-help. Napoleon Hill and before him, Orison Swett Marden. Well, Hill left a message because I wasn't there. He said, young man, we heard about you. When can you come to Chicago? I would like to meet you. So the next day, I was honored because I knew who Stone was, and I certainly knew who Napoleon Hill was. And I returned the call, and about 10 days later, I put everything together because I was dead broke at the time.
Right.
Got the money for the plane ticket. Me and my wife flew to Chicago. We had nothing. We didn't know what W. Clement Stone had in mind. I mean, this guy's calling you out, and he wants to meet you. I felt honored.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, somewhat.
Okay.
So I go into his palatial offices in the suburbs of Chicago, Lake Forest, Illinois, and he's sitting behind a big mahogany desk, pencil-thin black mustache, black hair slicked to the back, big, bright-flowered bow tie, smoking a Havana cigar, surrounded by a sea of lieutenants to handle every beck and whim of his desire. And I'm seated in front of him, and he said to me, he says, young man, you're not the first person to go around this country interviewing successful African-Americans. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Because I had conducted due diligence. I did my homework. I knew there was a void in the literature. And I said, you're kidding. I mean, so who else has done this? And at that point, Constance, he reached across his credenza, pulled out the last 100 written pages of Napoleon Hill. At the time of his death, Napoleon Hill was attempting to write a black version of his all-time classic, Think and Grow Rich.
Amazing.
He got 100 pages into the manuscript, died of a stroke. He was 84 years old. If Napoleon Hill would have lived 1 year longer, what is now Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice, would have been out in 1971 and not 1991. So he places those 100 pages on my lap, and he says, based on what we see in here, I got a proposition for you. And I said, what is that, Mr. Stone? He said, we want you to complete and finish and update this book. And I said, what book? He said, the book that's in your lap. And I flipped those 100 pages, and I said, I'm honored, but I can't do that. And when I told this man I can't do that, you could just see his lieutenants and all of his help and his staff just pull away from me, like, you know, all right, we want, here's a clear shot at him. We don't want to get hit with a stray bullet. Stone was not an individual that was used to hearing the word no. And so I said, I'm working on a book of my own. And he said, if you have any sense, push your book aside and finish this. And then I said, well, even if I wanted to do that, Mr. Stone, it would be very hard. I said, I got to be honest with you. I'll do it under one condition. And he said, what is that? I said, if you help me, I mean, I don't have a dime. I mean, I've socked every dime. I'm robbing Peter to pay Paul. I'm living off my wife's earning as an accountant. I got three daughters. I'm doing this full time. I can barely keep a roof over my head. And again, one of the wealthiest individuals at the time, it would have been nothing for him to reach into his lapel pocket, pull out his checkbook, write me out a check for $100,000 and say, go ahead and do this. And he says, no. He said, no, I'm not going to give you any money. He said, no one gave, you know, Napoleon Hill a dime. Andrew Carnegie didn't give this man a dime. He just gave him a challenge. If he could spend 20 years of his life, you know, interviewing the top 500, you know, men and women of his time. He said, we're not going to give you any dime. But he said to me something I'll never forget. He said, if you do the type of job that we think that you are capable of, this will create a fortune for you.
Oh, amazing.
And he gave me a coin. On one side of the coin, it was the size of like a silver dollar, bronze. On one side, it had his likeness, his picture, and on the other side, do it now. That's the only thing he ever gave me. He placed it in my hand November 4th, 1986, with the following words, young man, whoever I've given this medallion to has never failed to reach their goals and objectives. And so there was plenty of times, Constance, I wanted to throw that coin away. There were plenty of times that I wanted to give it away. There were plenty of times that I wanted to place it in an envelope and say, you know, Mr. Stone, this thing is worthless. 7 years of financial hell and high water. Wow. 7 years I can go anywhere in this country, in this world, and look anybody in the eye and tell them that they are capable of success. whatever your listeners have been exposed to and done, whatever, if they've been broke, I've been broker. Mm-hmm. If they've been broker, Constance, I've been brokest. Whatever they have experienced in life, almost lost my house in 5 different occasions. I didn't lose one car in the process. I lost 2. I can't begin to tell you the times my gas, my lights, my water, my electricity were cut off. But the Bible says it came to pass, not it came to stay.
And so what do you? What was in you that made you have that determination? Was it a call of God? Did you just have such a burning desire? What was it in you that you
all true greatness starts with a desire to be great. And the definition that I use of greatness is really a definition of success, that success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal or ideal, the same definition used by Earl Nightingale. But, yeah, nothing happens until you have a white-hot burning desire. You know, you read the original Think and Grow Rich, published in 1937 by Napoleon Hill, and he said there's a secret on these pages. And as a matter of fact, I mentioned the secret 30 times within the first chapter alone, and people look for it and this and that. It's desire. You know, what is it that you want to do? I mean, you are blessed to live in this country. If you are in this country right now, the most free, the most open society, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of flaws, there's a lot of stumbling blocks. I mean, it doesn't take much for you to see what I am, 58-year-old black male, you know, and I have 3 college-educated, you know, daughters. I mean, you know, you're going to meet up with racism sooner or later in your life. You're going to meet up with discrimination. Ladies, unfortunately, if you haven't heard it, you're going to meet up with sexism. Mm-hmm. But racism, discrimination, and sexism has never stopped the man or woman on the move. So, you know, like the subtitle of your show is all based off a choice. You know, there are 50 million different choices that we can make on a daily basis. 50 million in a 24-hour daily basis, Constant.
I did not know that. That's amazing.
Yeah, 50 million, okay? And you don't have to address them. You can ignore them. You can turn your back on them. But there are 2 choices that you must address and answer to day in and day out. Number one, you can accept the circumstances as they are. Or number 2, you can take the responsibility to change them. And the individuals that I met and interviewed always took the latter approach. They always took the latter approach. So, you know, after a 7-year ordeal, and then I finished that book, and the 100 pages that he gave me of Hill, the working title was Blacks Are Growing Rich. That was on the cover of the first page. It wasn't even in book form. It was, looked like they were mimeographed, and he had a clip in the upper left-hand corner. He only interviewed 3 individuals, none of the interviews I could use. He interviewed Ralph Bunche, who at the time was Undersecretary of the United Nations. Mm-hmm. He interviewed a gentleman by the name of James Brown, who was the founder and CEO of Crusader Life Insurance in Kansas City, Missouri. None of the interviews I could use. So, but for a 7-year period, I was exposed to anything and everything about Napoleon Hill. If there's one individual on this planet that attended Napoleon Hill University, it is me, because so many have made the transition and gone on, to other worlds and doing other things. But, I was exposed to anything and everything about Napoleon Hill, and he wrote 16 books in his lifetime. 6 of his books are, you know, you can go into a B. Dalton, a Borders, a
right.
Walden Books, whatever, and you can purchase right now. If you read all 16, from his first book, Laws of Success, to his last book, which really is Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice, the book, and that's why both of our names appear on the cover page, you will see that he's more and more metaphysical in his approach.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Think and Grow Rich, a Black Choice, and you have 12 different areas that I want to try to cover. Let's talk about inner space, the final frontier.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
We are all an idea. It's all an idea. And it's based off your attitude of mind. It's based off your thinking. Thoughts become things. You are. Well, what is Judgment Day, Constant Arnold? Is Judgment Day the day that we see our Maker? If we've been good for, you know, these, you know, if you live the normal life, all you get is 72 to 74 years on earth. And what does that equate to? It equates to about 25,000 days. That's all you get, Constance. You get 25,000 days on earth. Time is not running out. But your life is. So if we've been good for those 25,000 days, we go to a place called heaven. If we've been bad, somebody pulls the trap door and we go to hell. It doesn't mean that. That is not Judgment Day. Judgment Day is a day in which all your thoughts become things. As a matter of fact, today, Constance Arnold, Today is Judgment Day based off of yesterday's thoughts. You are where you are in life right now based off what you thought yesterday. So what is my word of advice to you? Guard your thinking. Change, your life begins to change when you change your attitudes of mind. The average individual in our society gets 4 ideas a year, any one of which, if they had the guts, the courage, the fortitude to chase their dream, will make them financially independent. So, I mean, the bottom line is change your life by changing your thoughts.
So do you monitor your thoughts all the time?
All the time.
All the time.
All the time. Auto-suggestion, the most important conversation that you will ever have in life is the one that you have with yourself. You know, here I am, my wife, you know, she said, oh, I'm going to the mall, I'm going to get my hairstyle, I'm in the house by myself. What's going through my mind? What are the words, pictures, and images going through my mind? You know, I think about dreams, I think about vision, I think about productivity, I think about yield, I think about the two words, I can. What are the words going, images, and, you know, ideas going through the mind of the unsuccessful person? Well, they think about lack. They think about scarcity. They think about, oh, woe is me. They think about, oh, I could never do that. My next-door neighbor tried that and blew up in his face. And they think about the two words, I can't. What is the difference between me and the neighbor who thinks that way? You just change your attitudes of mind.
Right.
God is no respecter of persons. I suggest that you go read Romans and see what Paul says in Romans 2:11. The Almighty is no respecter of persons. Society is completely indifferent. The world is completely indifferent, impersonal. You know, your environment doesn't care less who succeeds and who fails. The only thing it cares about, your thoughts.
Yeah. Napoleon Hill said you have absolute control over but one thing, and that is your thoughts.
That's right, your thinking.
And wealth is
shocked out. Yeah, go ahead.
Wealth is nothing more but a thought. You said
that's
that.
All it is. It's an idea. And there are 10 different forms of wealth. Money is only one of them. And so many people make the mistake thinking, and now we're getting into my fifth book, Have Versus Have Not, What Black Millionaires Know That Others Do Not. I mean, there are 10 different forms of wealth, and money is only one of them. So many people make the mistake thinking, oh, money, that's the only, you know, form of wealth. What else could be most important than money? Well, number one, what is it? And I'm talking to you like I talk to my hotshot know-it-all business students at Clark Atlanta.
Okay.
Dr. Kimbrough, money is number 3. What in the world could be number 1? Well, number 1 is knowledge. Why is knowledge number 1? Because the pocketbook can't grow until the mind grows.
Right.
You will never develop wealth in terms of money until you develop a wealth consciousness. Think and grow rich. Those
wow.
individuals, I mean, you know, you look at the greatest fortunes that have ever been developed and ever been created came out of the Depression. Look at Charles Goodyear. Look at Harvey Firestone. Look at John D. Rockefeller. Come on. Look at Charles Schwab.
So
look at Andrew Carnegie.
So these are great times for people who are struggling financially, who've been downsized.
Yeah, because it gets you to turn inward. Will you take the focus off? Will you cut the TV off? Will you turn the radio off? Will you turn inward? Will you lead from behind? And that's all. I mean, Nelson Mandela was in prison for 27 years. How in the world could this man lead when he's in prison? Because he led from behind.
Ah, power.
The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Well, what the hell does that mean? Well, it depends on who you ask. Unfortunately, you ask the average pastor who happens to be, and I'm not knocking anybody, mm-hmm. who happens to be of African-American descent, and they'll tell you, oh, that's living proof. Black America's been last all these years, and one day, pie in the sky will be first. No, it doesn't mean that. What it does mean that we live in a society that's predicated upon the fact until I see it, I won't believe it. In other words, the physical that you place first, now place last. And the mental that you have last, place first.
Right. So speaking of seeing, share a little bit about imagination and the power of imagination.
Well, imagination,
creative
dreaming. Yeah. Imagination is everything. You know, the dream is everything. You see with your mind's eye, Constance Arnold, because your physical eye will lie to you. All right, if you and I, you come to my Atlanta home, and 5 hours from here, let's you and I go to Savannah, and let's you and I stand on the beach. Let's go to Hilton Head or, you know, South Carolina or Savannah, whatever, and let's look across the Atlantic Ocean, and you would say, gee, Dennis, it looks like the sky and the water meet. Well, the sky and the water never meet. Otherwise, there'll be no such thing as gravity. All right, let's you and I stand on some railroad tracks and let's peer down the railroad tracks. And you say, Dennis, it looks like the tracks are coming together. Well, the tracks never come together. Otherwise, the train would fall off the tracks. Now, those are two examples of your physical eye lying to you. So when you get the dream, when you get the vision, and you have the audacity, the boldness, the temerity, the courage to look in the mirror, and you say, this I will do, this I will have, this I will become, this is my purpose in life. This is why the Lord took time out of his busy schedule to blow breath into my lungs. This I will attain. Well, when you get your hand spanked, don't see with your physical eye. Keep going.
Right.
When people tell you, oh, you can never do that, look what happened to such and such. No, all those who have ears hear, keep going. Don't look with your physical eye. Look with your mental eye. There is nothing precocious about the Creator. Our Creator would never promise you anything if you do not have the capability to attain it.
Right. So would you suggest that people take out time every day to just daydream?
What time of day did Martin Luther King get up? Martin Luther King got up every single day, and no one was taking more of a beating. I mean, you go back from December 5th, 1955, when Rosa Parks sat down so a whole nation could stand up. That was on a Thursday, December 1st, 1955, to the day he died. This man got up at 6:30 in the morning. He ate the same breakfast. What was his breakfast? Cup of coffee, glass of orange juice. What did he do for the next 45 minutes to 1 hour of his life? He went in his study and meditated.
I did not know that.
He went in his study and meditated. His house was firebombed 3 times, and every time his wife and his children were there. He went in his study and meditated.
Mm-hmm.
He had so many death threats. You think the threats on Obama right now, this is a piece of cake, like a holiday on earth compared to what King went through.
Right.
Every day he went in his study and meditated. He owned 6 suits in his life. 4 of his suits were black, 2 were gray. He went in his study and meditated. He won the Nobel Prize, and as you know, the Nobel Prize came with a windfall of $250,000. He gave all but $10,000 of it back to the movement. And what did he do with the $10,000? Well, that's the $10,000 that he borrowed from his father-in-law to pay his income taxes. He went in his study and meditated. They told him it could never be done. They told him he was too young. He was 5'7", weighed 177 pounds. He went in his study and meditated. He focused on the true idea. Now, I don't know what you saw, January 29th. Maybe, in our race, Black America says we saw a black man put his hand on a Bible and take an oath on CNN. I didn't see that. Tell me. I don't know. I don't know where I was, but I didn't see that. But what I did see, Constance Arnold, I saw a black man on national TV place his hand on a Bible and look into a camera and look to his race of 33.4 million strong. And say no more excuses.
Right.
Now, I did see that. What do they have in common? They focus their thoughts.
Right. Share a little bit about the top 5%. What does that mean?
The what?
The top 5% of people when it comes to desire.
Oh, yeah. Those are the individuals that we're talking about that harness this power.
Okay.
If you take an individual, at age 20, 21, all the talent, all the capability, all the opportunity, and, place them in a free and open society like this country, give them every opportunity in the world, take 100 individuals like this, and at the end of age 65, only 5 are going to hit their goals, whatever the goals may be, and part of the goals will be financial. What's going to happen to the other 95%? Some will be living on welfare, some will be living on Social Security. Unfortunately, 20, 21 of them will be dead, will have made their transition. Some will be living off, the goodwill of others. Well, what separates that 5% from the other 95%? These are individuals with clearly delineated goals.
Mm.
Clear, written goals. Why are written goals important? Because pale ink is more powerful than the most retentive memory.
Mm. Wow. So when you research what makes the great, what were some of the characteristics that some of those persons possessed?
Well, number one is purpose.
Okay.
They were defined by a clear purpose. They knew exactly what they wanted to do, to be, to have in life. And I don't care whether it was Jeanetta Cole, president of Spelman College, all the way to Ben Carson. And I interviewed Ben Carson twice. And I mean, his story is unbelievable. And you know, you may have read the book Praying Hands, or you may have seen the PBS special where he separated the Siamese twins connected at the base of the brain, but you don't know what was going on around him at the time. I mean, the own medical community at Johns Hopkins, some of the greatest doctors in the world practice at Johns Hopkins, they told Carson, don't touch those girls. They told him. They said, Carson, you're going to kill one of them, and then the other one won't have a life worth living. And, you know, the mother of those two Siamese twins connected at the base of the brain, the toughest decision she had to make was which one of her daughters was she going to allow to live. And Ben Carson looks the woman in the eye and says, sweetheart, both of them are going to live. Both of them are going to live. And this is why this man was created, man. And don't you know that procedure took 22 hours? I mean, we got folks who can't even sleep for 22 hours, let alone perform brain surgery for 22 hours.
That's right. And I read his biography, and he was certainly a man of faith.
Oh, he prays before he does anything.
I
mean, if you tell him, you know, Dr. Carson, I got a headache, and he hands you two aspirin, he's going to pray before he gives you the aspirin.
So talk about faith and its role in a person being successful.
Well, faith is a belief in a power greater than yourself. I mean, you and I may not be able to accomplish our gifts and desires of our heart, but tapping into that superconscious, we can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Faith is believing in yourself when no one else will.
Right.
You know, faith is tapping into that superconscious power that says, you know, Constance, this is why you created. This is the magic moment. This is the defining moment.
So are you amazed that so many people don't know they're looking for their purpose, they're searching for their purpose? Are you amazed at that?
Yeah. You know, and here's the thing, and that's the difference between the have versus have not. You know, the have, you know, when you look at the way the have versus the have not approach faith and spirituality and religion, the have not is to praise him. The have is to practice. The have will look at Philippians 4:13 and say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, when the have read that, they say, well, what in the world are we seated here? Come on, let's go do something.
Uh-huh.
I'm out of here. Peace out, my brother. I got things to do. I got mountains to climb. I got, you know, stars to reach. And that's what Jesus tried to get over to the point to Peter. How many times did he tell Peter? He says, Peter, he says, you know, Peter, don't lose sight of the big picture, my brother. You know, this is about God, grace, and gratitude. Peter, praise is what I do. When Moses led, you know, the Jews, you know, out of Egypt, out of bondage, and they were border between Pharaoh's army and the Red Sea, and Moses turns his eyes toward the sky and prays to the Lord of hosts. What was the response, Constance Arnold? Well, the response was, well, you know, why do you pray unto me? I've given you everything that you need.
Right.
Lift up your eyes. And he lifted up his eyes, and what? The sea parted.
Right. And I don't know.
In other words, why are you crying unto me, man? I've given you everything.
Right.
You have a mind. You have a power. Use it. And you'd be shocked how few people use it.
So many people are praying, and I'm like, do something. I remember one general said he would rather see 1 million people going in the wrong direction than in the right direction. At least you're doing something that gives you momentum. Do something. Well, share a little bit about persistence and understanding failure.
Persistence is the ability to hang on if the others have given up.
Persistence
is believing in yourself when no one else will. Mm. Persistence is how I reach my goals and objectives. I would not be on this phone talking to you right now if it weren't for persistence.
Right.
That's the only form of the 10 forms of wealth. Well, I had a few others. They all came into play, you know, at some point. But that was the main, you know, that was the main quality that I had. The main form of wealth that I had was my ability to persist.
Wow.
You know, at the time, you know, I was a pharmaceutical sales rep right before I left that position to work on, you know, what became Think and Grow Rich and Black Choice. And these folks didn't know me from Adam. So imagine this, Constance. I send a letter. John Johnson was number one on the hit parade. He was the wealthiest individual at the time, and I knew that I could not have this book without interviewing that man. He didn't know me from Adam, Constance. So I send my letter and my proposal. Mr. Johnson, I'd like to come to Chicago and, you know, a nice lengthy interview to, you know, tell me how you succeeded and blah, blah, blah. Well, I was a pharmaceutical sales rep at the time, and I was working in my territory, and it was about lunchtime, and I was pretty close to home. And I said, well, I'm not going to McDonald's. I'm not going to Burger King. I'll just swing by the house and get something. And don't you know, I swung by the house, and the phone rang. And who was it? John Johnson.
Oh, my goodness.
See, back then, there was no caller ID. There was no call waiting. It was John Johnson. I didn't interview him once. I interviewed him twice.
Amazing. And so many people give up. You talk about blessed failures. Give me some example of failures where people can look for the blessing in failures.
Yeah, it depends on, you know, and again, and that's a great segue into John Johnson. You know, all the times that he was told no. You know, this man created the black consumer. He created the black model. And all the times that he told me no, and I said, Mr. Johnson, how did you overcome it? And he said, well, number one, I realized that the first no of the day means good morning. And number two, I also realized that only I keep score. You talk about blessed failure. When I interviewed Don King, and here's a man, you know, served, you know, 4 to 6 years in Marion State Penitentiary in Ohio. Blessed failure. He read every book in that prison library.
Did he?
If that were enough, he took correspondence courses from Ohio University. If that wasn't enough, he took correspondence courses from Ohio State University. And if that weren't enough, when he got out, he was offered a full scholarship at Harvard Business School.
Amazing.
He said, I was determined to make this time serve me. I wasn't going to serve this time.
Well, you know, in your book, you talk a lot about money. I love it when you said money doesn't talk, it screams. What do you mean
especially
by that?
Especially cash, yeah, especially cash, because, you know, you feel it when you give out cash. That's what I tell people, all right, don't use your credit card, you have cash. Cash hurts. Yeah, but money screams, and we all have it, and you will never value money. You will never value until you take upon the value of savings. You know, what W. Clement Stone told me, and this is before, we were going through the dog days in Constance, I couldn't find two quarters. I couldn't find two nickels with a roadmap. And he said to me, he says, young man, he said, you know, one day you're going to come into a fortune. People are going to pay a lot of money to hear you speak. Your book is going to sell, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying under my breath, sure, Mr. Stone, sure.
Right, right.
And what he told me, he said, if you cannot save 10% of everything that you earn, the seeds of greatness aren't in you.
Oh, amazing. So is that why you think our country is in the shape that it's in today, because people just spend? I know you talk about that.
Oh, yeah. You don't value it, man. I mean, look at some of my students at school. They dress better than me. They drive better cars than me. I mean, they don't value it. They only use one form of the 10 forms of wealth, man. They don't value it. But, see, there's going to be an accounting in our life sooner or later, man.
Right, and
there's going to be a judgment day. And you know, sooner or later, you know, all these bills are going to come due, not figuratively, not literally. I'm speaking rhetorically now.
Right, I understand. Yeah. Share some insight on self-reliance. When I saw that, I really wanted you to talk about that, because I know so many people, especially in business, feel that they have to be interdependent instead of self-reliant.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, like I said earlier in the show, those individuals who have won mostly in life have relied mostly on themselves. Now, I'm not telling, you know, people say, you know, self-help, okay, what is this argument leading to? Do you believe in Bill Cosby? Is Bill Cosby right, or is Michael Eric Dyson right? It's none of that. What I'm saying is, you know, take advantage of the, you know, of what you've been given. Take advantage of the blessings that you have
right.
been given. That's self-reliance. I mean, how old was Booker T. Washington when he founded Tuskegee University? He was 24 years old. Mm. How old was the slave owner, John Newton? The slave, he's a slave owner, captain of the slave ship. He goes to West Africa. He gets this crew of, you know, 200 slaves on the slave ship halfway across the Atlantic, a terrible storm. He comes up on the deck. He falls on his knees, Constance Arnold, and he says, something's wrong with this picture. something's wrong with taking these 200-some-odd individuals, bring them on top of this deck once every 30 days, throwing salt water on them, throwing scraps of food down there, and there they are down in that filth, down in that decadence, down there and all that, you know, all that filth and urine and all this, that, and everything. He says, you know, something's wrong with this picture. We've got to take this ship back to its port of call and release these individuals. And he fell on his knees and wrote those words, "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound."
Wow.
You know, saved a wretch like me. I was blind, but now I can see. How old was John Newton when he crossed, when he came to that epiphany? He was 24 years old.
Wow. So for our listeners who are listening, besides becoming clear about what you want by going in and then visualizing and having a goal and strong desire, what could you say to people who may just be just feeling so downtrodden, I don't know what to do, Dr. Kimbrough, in very simple.
Start where you are. This is Booker T. Washington again.
Okay.
Start where you are. You know, start where you are with what you have, knowing that what you have is plenty enough. And again, all right, he graduates from Hampton. He goes, you know, to Alabama. He went in the South, raised $6 million in the South to build, imagine the hell that this man caught,
oh,
you know, traipsing through the South to raise $6 million. Start where you are with what you have, knowing that what you have is plenty enough. So what do you have? You have a mind. You have your health. You have the love from your family, you know. You have hopes and you have dreams. Okay, you have a creator, a God that loves you, that knows every hair on your head. Be still. Peace. Be still. In other words, shut out all the nonsense. Turn away from all that nonsense that we see on a daily basis, because that is not the truth.
Wow.
What is the truth? The true idea that you have been created for greatness. Mm-hmm. I have Constance Arnold on my left. And I have Constance Arnold's best friend on my right. I give both of you a piece of chalk, and we walk into a classroom, and I tell both of you to go up to the blackboard and multiply 50 times 2. 50 times 2. Constance Arnold says 50 times 2 is 100. Constance Arnold's best friend says 50 times 2 is 99. What is the difference between Constance Arnold and her best friend? The difference is Constance Arnold knows the truth, and her best friend doesn't.
Amazing.
How many of us know the truth? That's why you're here. You're here to make a difference.
So
why is it going to be better? Because you're here. You're here, number one, to make a difference. Number two, to make a difference with others who want to make a difference. Number three, to make a difference with others who want to make a difference, doing something that makes a difference. But number four, to make a difference with others who want to make a difference, doing something that makes a difference at a time when it makes all the difference in the world.
Amazing.
You make the rest of your life the
right.
Best of your life.
So do you watch television at all, Dr. Kimbrough? Do you recommend?
Yeah, I watch, I'm a big sports buff. I'm a big Yankee fan. I watch my sports, but everything is in divine order.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear what I said, Constance Arnold?
I said
everything is in divine order. The sun comes up on the east and sets out on the west. It moves from left to right. Water, two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. Everything is in divine order. You know, David, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. What is thy rod? Thy rod symbolizes atonement. What is atonement? My God and I are one. At one mit. At one mit.
Amazing.
Powerful.
So talk a little bit about
Arnold, if you knew who walks beside you every day of your life on this journey of life, Constance, you would never doubt or fear again.
Some days I don't know that, Dr. Kimbrough.
Why not?
Well, maybe because I've taken my attention and my focus away from it. There may be moments when I don't remember who I am, but when I come back to who I am, knowing who I am in God, and I remember.
And when
that,
you know who you are and whose you are, it's game over.
Absolutely.
And what does God want? God wants from us the same thing that he sees in us. If I ask you right now, the first time you fell in love, are you married?
No, I'm divorced.
Okay. Well, just go back. When you did get married and when you were courting with your spouse, your husband, whatever, I bet you could tell me the first time you met him. I bet you could tell me what he wore. I bet you could tell me what hour of the day, where it was, the circumstance.
I sure can.
And you were madly in love.
Right.
Well, that's what God wants from us. He wants us to be madly in love with him. He wants us to be head over heels in love.
In love. Amazing. So we have about 15 minutes. Talk a little bit about the three magic words, right mental attitude, and how important is that?
Yeah, right mental attitude. I'm not talking about, you know, a positive attitude. I don't tell people to go through life with rose-colored glasses on and everything, pie in the sky, everything will be fine. No, not me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do say is seek the right mental attitude. In other words, I don't tell you to go through life with rose-colored glasses on. What I do tell you to do is take the rose-colored glasses off and see and perceive your world differently. Is the glass half full or is it half empty? Well, I say that the glass is half full, and how do we get it completely full? By focusing on the traits, the keys, the qualities of those who have succeeded before us. That is the right mental attitude.
Wow, that's amazing. And what are some other differences between the haves and the have-nots that you've discovered in your research?
Well, I mean, in terms, okay, there's a calculus of compensation, all right? And if we looked at, say, 9, 10, or 12 independent variables, and what I have found from my research, because all I've done, Constance, I've surveyed black millionaires over the past 3-4 years. I use a survey. I ask them 118 questions.
Mm-hmm.
These are certifiable millionaires, no athletes, no entertainers, no celebrities. These are people that you pass on the street and you would never know it. And out of that research, the book that I'm working on now, you know, if we came up with, say, 10 independent variables, if time is one of those variables, how does the have-not view time? Well, the have-not views as time present to past. Oh, well, I failed in the past, and it's always been this way. Well, how does the have view time? Future-oriented. I don't care what happened in the past. This is where we are. Let's start today. We can make a different life starting right now.
Mm-hmm.
If the independent variable is the family unit, the have-not, matriarchal. The have, patriarchal to legacy. You're an Arnold. Your granddaddy went to this college. You going to this college. Girl, you going to go this private school. After you go to this private school, you're going to go to this college. Then you're going to work on your MBA. You're going to get your PhD. You're going to get your law degree. You see, that's legacy. That's what your parents are telling you. That's what the haves tell their kids when they're 3, 4, 5 years old. And the next 24 years of that child's life have been mapped into the future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If the independent variable is education, the have not K through 12, man, I'm going kindergarten through 12, that's all I'm going. The have, lifelong learning.
Hmm. I know one of your daughters has her MBA.
Yeah, and the other one's working on a master's in education.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
If the independent variable is money, the have not, spend it, consume it, act rich. The have, conserve it, save it, act poor. The wealthy are wealthy because they act poor. The poor are poor because they act wealthy.
How do the wealthy act poor?
They can save, you know, they save their money. You know, if in terms of they respect their money, they save 10-15% of everything that they earn.
Mm.
That's the thing. They you know, they use coupons. They're not out spending and buying and getting the latest. They're utilitarian, you know, in their buying habits.
So are they self-disciplined, would you say, that they
have?
Oh,
without a doubt.
Uh-huh.
Without a doubt.
In all areas?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the average black millionaire gets up 5:30 in the morning, calls it a day, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. The average black millionaire works, you know, 60, 70 hours a week. They exercise about 3.5 hours a week. For, you know, men, it's golf, tennis, some weightlifting, walking, running. For women, it's golf, tennis, yoga, and gardening. So, yeah, they're definitely disciplined in approach. They attend church 2-3 times a week. That means a Sunday service,
mm-hmm.
and either Wednesday night Bible study or some type of auxiliary or board meeting. Okay, the church that they attend, less than 2,500 members. Black female millionaires, they tithe. They give 10% of the earnings to the church. Black males, they give 10-15% of the earnings to charity. So, yeah, they are disciplined in their approach.
So why do you think so many continue to fail?
Well, I mean, and again, failure is not a bad thing if you learn from it.
Absolutely.
You know, failure is never failure. You know, failure is only failure if you refuse to learn something from it. I mean, I look at how many times I failed, but I'm always trying to find the seed or the equivalent benefit of every failure. And that's what's meant by failing forward.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you read my first book, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, there's a quote in there from Confucius that says, a man or woman is great not because they haven't failed. A man or woman is great because failure has not stopped them. Success is nothing but a statistical event. That's all it is.
Okay. What about fear? How do you deal with fear? Somebody who's
fear is false education appearing real.
Okay.
False education appearing real. That's fear. Again, going back to seeing with your mind's eye.
So if a person is fearful about starting a business, they should...
Yeah, step out on faith.
Okay.
You know, I have so many video clips that I show to my students, and one of the video clips is that old... Indiana Jones,
mm-hmm.
where he is in the cavern and he can't see, and in order to Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, the skull or something, whatever, and he steps out from the mountaintop, and when he takes that first step, the path is illuminated. There it is. You know, what does Martin Luther King said? You know, he said, you know, you take the first step, you know, on the staircase, and the other steps will be revealed.
Right. What do you think about The Secret, the latest phenomenon about the law of attraction?
Yeah, it's nothing new. We become what we think about.
Right.
That is completely and totally, that's nothing new. I mean, that's been known since mankind, since ad infinitum. I mean, Napoleon Hill, you know, said the same thing. And where did he get it from? He got it from Orson Swett Marden. Orson Swett Marden, that was the individual that Napoleon Hill learned from and grew from.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, you become what you think about.
And so your last chapter is on outer space, your greatest discovery. Expound on that for our listeners.
Well, my book begins with inner space.
Right.
Taking care of individual thoughts. And then outer space is taking care of, you know, the windfall that you come, that you have garnered because you changed your thinking. What is outer space? Well, the actual physical money that you have. You take care of it. You save it. You invest it. You use it. You help to build strong communities. That's outer space. Inner space, yeah, I'm going back to school, I'm getting my education. Now that you got your PhD, what are you going to do with it?
Right.
You're going to use it to serve others.
Right.
Service is the price you pay for the space that you occupy. And going back to Martin Luther King, anybody can serve.
Right.
We are here to serve. And that's not Martin Luther King. I mean, that's Albert Einstein. We are here to serve others. That's Albert Schweitzer. We are here to make it better for future generations.
Well, you know, you talk about some other mental laws, you know, the law of use or lose, cause and effect, belief, the law of attraction, the law of compensation.
Yeah, see, that's natural law. It's all God-based. It's all spiritual-based. I mean, you go read Stephen Covey, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, it's all based off of natural law.
It is.
Yeah, that was his PhD dissertation that he turned into a book. And those philosophies that, and Deepak Chopra, those philosophies that are based off of natural law, that's nothing new. I mean, let's go read the Bible.
Right.
I mean, the Bible is a very old book, Constance, but it's still ahead of its time.
Mm.
I mean, here you have 66 chapters written by 40 authors, you know, from Genesis to Revelation. You know, you take the Bible and take it to a chemistry class and assay it down to its finest components, and what are the two finest components? Take all 66 chapters written by 40 authors. You know, what is the keynote of harmony? Okay, give me, just tell me what I need to know. I don't have time to read the whole Bible. Tell me what I need to know. Number one, be not afraid.
Hmm.
And number two, believe.
Wow.
Be not afraid and believe. Okay, now I can do something with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Beyonce, here she is, Beyonce, age 13 in the eighth grade, about to chuck her dream, forget her dream. She goes to her father and she says, I'm sick and tired of these singing lessons. I'm sick and tired of these dancing lessons. I'm sick and tired of you taking me to the mall. People are laughing at me. Everybody's talking about me behind my back at school. I just forget it all. I just want to fit in. I want to be a normal child. This is not worth it. Well, what happened? Well, what happened was her heroes at the time in Vogue, who Beyonce embellished, who Beyonce enamored. She was in love with those four women of En Vogue. If age 13, you go to her Houston home in the eighth grade, you couldn't tell the paint on the walls in her bedroom because of all the the En Vogue posters that Beyonce mm-hmm. had. Well, she chucks her dream away, tears coming out of her eyes. En Vogue comes to Houston, Texas to give a concert, and Beyonce Knowles, a young impressionable Beyonce Knowles, not only gets front row tickets, she gets backstage passes. And for 2 hours, she's watching her heroes give the concert of their life, tears pouring out of her eyes. Why? Because she turned her back on a dream. After the concert, she goes in the back, she goes in the waiting room, in the dressing room, and meets those four young ladies. What in God's name did those four women in En Vogue tell a young, impressionable Beyonce Knowles at the lowest point of her life? They told her one word: believe. Believe, Constance.
Powerful.
Believe.
Powerful. And so surely your life has been radically changed by listening and interviewing all of these people. How has your life personally changed just by?
Oh, there's no more excuses for me. I mean, because, people say, oh, man, Dr. Kimber, I love the book. Your book changed my life. Mom, the book did not. I had nothing to do with it. You were at a point in your life where all you needed was a little nudging. Mm-hmm. But, in terms of over and over, just these paragons of excellence telling me the same thing over and over. And people say, man, I love your speaking. I love your talks and this, that. Well, the only reason why you hear the passion coming out in my voice is because I live this.
I can tell. It comes through. Every time I've heard you, it's always the same.
Yeah,
you're
you can go hear speakers, and you can tell, oh, I read that in a book. I didn't read doo-doo in a book. I sat at the feet of somebody, and they told me this.
Right, right.
Alvin Passant told me this. Jeanetta Cole told me that. Ben Carson told me this. Don King told me that. Bob Johnson of BET told me this. Kathy Hughes of Radio 1 told me that. Forget all the athletes and entertainers, man. Yolanda Adams told me this. And Spike Lee told me that. And, oh, my goodness, Tiger Woods' father told me this. And, oh, my goodness, and, T.D. Jakes told me that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have about 4 minutes left, and I want our listeners to hear how can they contact you, where can they buy your books.
You can buy my books anywhere. You can get them B. Dalton, Borders, Walton. Go online to Amazon.com. They're bestsellers. I have been unbelievably blessed. And you go to my website, DennisKimbrough.com.
Okay. So are you living the life of your dreams, Dr. Kimbrough?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I make every day count.
Do you?
Every day count. No regrets here. Make every day count.
That's very, very powerful. Well, you have certainly blessed our listeners. And if you had just a summary or some final words to share with our listeners, we have about 4 minutes. What would you say to people who are listening?
There's nothing to fear. You're as good as the best, as strong as the mightiest, too. You can pass any battle or test, for there's no one just like you. There's only one you in the world today, so nobody else you see can do your work in justifying way. You're the only you to be. There's nothing to fear. You can and you will, for you're the invincible you. So, Constance Arnold and your listeners, set your foot on the highest hill. There's nothing you cannot do.
Wow.
Start with a dream, commit to excellence, and wrap it up with personal responsibility.
Wow. You have really inspired me today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Constance Arnold. You have a great day, darling.
You will. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
That was just a great interview with Dr. Dennis Kimbrough. Wow. You have so much information that you can draw from next week to really implement into your life. Just think about some of the things that he said. He talked about inner space, your final frontier. He was really big on talking about going in and spending some time every day going inwardly and visualizing. He shared that you have absolutely control over but one thing, and that is your thoughts. And, we talk about change your thinking, change your life, and that wealth is nothing but a thought or an idea. So this week I want you to spend some time thinking about abundance and wealth coming into your life. I want you to spend some time in your imagination, creative daydreaming, Just take some time to get a clear, vivid picture of what you want and see yourself already with it. I also want you to have a burning desire for the things that you want to happen in your life. He shared about faith and belief and how powerful faith is in our lives. He also talked about the three magic words, having the right mental attitude and just having a burning desire, and that it is possible with you. And so I just want you to listen to this maybe more than one time and just take some really serious notes and then come up with a couple of things that you can really begin to implement in your life. He talked about money and how money was sacred. And so on this show, what we're endeavoring to do is to give you information that you can begin to take and implement into your life. I'm going to encourage you to go and get his books. Remember, those books are Think and Grow Rich or Black Chores. The one that I really love is What Makes the Great Great, Strategies for Extraordinary Achievement. And just read those books, meditate in those books, underscore in those books, and then just begin to implement taking one baby step at a time. Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. And remember that we're on every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for my people on the West Coast. Keep those emails coming to me. My email address is constance@fulfillingyourpurpose.com, and I would certainly be more than happy to answer any questions that you may have. Well, this is Constance Arnold with the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show. And what a great show it has been today, saying to you that all things are possible. If you change your thinking and believing, you can begin to manifest the life of your dream. Have a blessed and a prosperous week.